face out. Two ducks in my spyglass, furry as a mouse. It's a sweet nature, a sweet nature thing. It's a sweet nature, a sweet nature thing. It's a mighty fine,
mighty fine,
a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine,
mighty fine,
a mighty fine nature thing.
Leaves lay down like a lady. Welcome to Yarns at Yin Hu, a podcast about the fiber arts and other post-apocalyptic skills. Episode 142. Trick or Treat, Sunday, October 30th, 2016. I'm your host, Sarah. You can find me on social media as Sarah Pomegranate. The Yarns at Yin Hu podcast has a Facebook page, and it's available on iTunes. Photographs and links to the things I talk about are available on my website, yarnsatyinhu.com. Today's episode features the following segments: The Front Porch, Ever Expanding Skill Set, and a segment on FleeceWise. Thank you to everyone who's been in touch with me over the past few weeks and for your participation on Ravelry threads and for personal messages. In my segment about Rhinebeck, I forgot to mention a lot of things, but one of the things I neglected to mention is that so many folks shared their enthusiasm for the new version of Sweet that I've been using to open the podcast. The lyrics and music were written by Samuel, and earlier I had been using a recording he did many, many years ago of a young lady named Krista Long, who is very elusive and we can't find her on the internet. She recorded that when she was about 16 years old. Samuel produced the album, and she's since grown up, moved on to other things, and is difficult to track down. I really liked that female vocalist version of the song, which is about our Chinese tea house, Yin Hu, where we live. But more recently, Samuel has recorded this song with Bovine Social Club, and it's on their first and currently only album. The album is available in its entirety on iTunes, and I will provide a link to that in this week's episode and show notes. But I will also give away a few copies of Bovine Social Club's first album. It includes Sweet, the version you've been hearing on the podcast, as well as some other original songs written by Samuel, and I think one or two covers that they do with their own original take on it. So if you're interested in winning a copy of that album, put a note about it in the Ravelry thread for this episode, episode 142. Maybe you could say hello to Samuel. Maybe if you have a man in your life who is involved in the fiber arts, you might write a note about that, because it's something that I'm encouraging him to do. So far, he has expressed a little bit of interest in weaving. In fact, weaving is the only thing he's actually done. A few times when I've had a loom set up, he has taken the shuttle through several times, and I showed him how to end one piece of yarn and begin another in a piece of weaving. So I'm trying to be subtle, but I am trying to encourage him to at least consider a little more carefully what the benefits of fiber arts could be in his life. So if you have a man in your life who's taken up fiber art, maybe you could write a note about that, and they could be some things that I could share with him as a means of encouragement. I have shared with Samuel all of the compliments you've given about his version of the song on the podcast and how much you enjoy it. So thank you for all of those kind words. The Front Porch. I am working on two relatively recent projects. One of them is the Tungata cowl. This is a cowl designed by Stephen West, and it's one of his earliest designs. It has some Fair Isle texture, and it also has corrugated rib. It's in three colors, and the knitting is doubled over and then seamed along the edge, so it's a double thick cowl, and it's intended to be worn doubled around the neck. I'm knitting this for Samuel in part because he gets so much wear and so many compliments from the string band cowl that I knit him several years ago. It's his warm weather wardrobe, and I thought it would be nice to expand that a little bit for the holidays. Samuel went to Steel City Fiber Festival in Bethlehem with me this spring, and he selected three colors for this cowl, and I believe he has forgotten that he did that, and forgotten that we did a pattern search, and he said he thought this Tungata cowl would be great. So now I'm knitting it, and I'm kind of knitting it on the sly. He hasn't really seen me working on it very much. It is a merino cashmere nylon base, and he selected it because he is extremely sensitive, especially around the face and neck. So even though it wasn't my initial choice for yarn for this pattern, I think if he will wear it and he loves it, that's the important thing. And the colors are a very masculine black, pale gray, and a spicy brown color as the contrast color. I had cast this on and was knitting happily, worked on it quite a bit when I was staying in our Airbnb with Claire when we were at Rhinebeck. And then when I got home and I was looking at it, I thought that it didn't seem long enough that it would really double over. And Samuel is not the type to wear a cowl in one long loop around his neck. That's a little bit too jewelry-like for him. So I started reading the notes, very helpful notes about this pattern. And many people commented that they either cast on additional stitches or they used a different type of cast on to make sure that it was stretchy. So I decided that I would rip out all the knitting, and I had finished the corrugated ribbing on one side and had begun to do the color work. But I ripped that all out, and I decided to use a provisional cast on instead of a traditional cast on, or I think I had used a German twisted cast on, which usually is pretty stretchy. But when I looked at that cast-on edge and considered the fact that I would need to knit two together all the way around to double the fabric, I decided that it wasn't stretchy enough. So now I'm happily back past ground zero. So I'm past the point I was when I had ripped the entire thing out, which feels like progress. And I'm having a lot of fun with the color work. I think I will make this slightly narrower than the pattern indicates. There are five sets of the stranded color work in the pattern directions, and I think I will just do three, and then corrugated ribbing, and then the backside or the inside of the cowl is much, much easier because it's just stripes of color. And folks who have put photographs of their patterns up on Ravelry have done a really wide range of variation with their striping and their use of color. So I think that will be fun, and I think that this will be a very handsome gift. I'm knitting it on US size 4 needles, and that's what the pattern calls for. And the yarn I'm using is by Crab Apple Yarns. I believe it's relatively local to me here in Eastern PA, and the woman who sold it was a vendor at this Steel City Fiber Festival. So maybe when I go back in the spring, I can take the cowl to show her what I've knit up. The other project I've been working on is my sheep to shawl project. This has been a long saga because this is really the yarn that I created in my first year of the program. I had knit something for our final class in December of 2015, and then I ripped it all out this fall or summer. I can't remember when I just decided that I wasn't wearing the garment that I made, and I wanted something that was wearable and useful and that would really showcase all of this work that I had done. So I ripped it all out, reskeined the yarn, washed the yarn, and I've since put the yarn back into cakes and balls, and I've added some of the yarn that I've created in this season. In particular, I'm really excited about some green yarn. One of the colors that I had a challenge working into projects was yarn dyed with weld, which creates kind of a highlighter yellow. And when I look at this yellow in conjunction with all of the other colors that I've created using botanical dyes, it just doesn't work very well. It's really hard to get it to match. One technique that can work for color blending is to dip all the yarns into either walnut or a pale indigo bath. It kind of evens out the colors. In the case of walnut, it adds a little bit of depth to the color. And I considered that, but I wasn't certain that I'd be using all of my yarn in this project. So I thought instead I might dip the garment in a walnut dye bath. I could do a test and make sure that I wasn't getting it too dark, but just to mute everything out and blend colors together a little bit. I brought some walnuts home from Fibercraft Studio because one of my classmates collected quite a few of them and then flash froze them so that the worms that are in the exterior of the walnut wouldn't be a problem. So this was a great collection of walnuts, and I foolishly had it in a bag on my porch. I thought it was securely tied, but the squirrels got in there and they took some of my walnuts. I think Samuel caught them before they just ran off with every single one. We don't have a walnut tree immediately around the house, even though there are others in the neighborhood. And I guess the squirrels just thought I was leaving them a gift or something. So my walnut supply has dwindled, and I may go out and collect some others. But in the meantime, I've thought of another way to blend or mute the color in this new project a little bit. And the project is a poncho with a cowl neckline. We'll see how it goes. But I thought that what I could do is just to alter two colors every other round for the entire piece. And that would just prevent blocks of color, which is one of the things I didn't really care for in what I completed for last year. It was bands of color. And sometimes there was a really sharp jump between one color and another. So I'm hoping that will help. And then I can assess whether or not that's enough color blending. And if I want to, I don't know, get the colors homogenized a little bit more, I can try a walnut dye bath. We'll see how that goes, but I am enjoying the knitting. I think I have the sizing for this poncho suitable for my body size and shape. And I'm using some numbers and some ideas for knitting a top-down sweater as my base. I'm not copying the numbers exactly, I'm just using them for size. And right now I have knit the cowl in some singles yarn on large needles, so it's sort of drapey and soft. And then I've done decreases so that I can get a more fitted neckband. And then increases again for the yoke and shoulders. And then I'm doing some raglan increases almost like you would do for a sweater, except that I won't be separating for sleeves. I'll just leave off those increases at some point when the yolk seems complete, and then maybe do a much more gradual set of increases down the side. I have a little one-by-one rib along the sides of this poncho so that there's like a little more structure along the shoulders. And it also pulls the poncho in a little bit in a way that I hope will be flattering. And then, like I said, I'm just alternating yarn. So as soon as I run out of something, I just pick up the next color, and then I keep alternating every other row for color blending. And Samuel helped me quite a bit lining up all the colors that I had and thinking about a pleasing order in which I could use them. Since I have considered all of my colors, I've added to it. So I added some greens that had been dyed for me in September when I left the class a little bit early, and I left some of those yellow, those weld skeins, to be dipped in indigo. They came out a beautiful, grassy, vibrant green, which is amazing. And then I had some pokeberry dyed yarn. I kept some of it in like a rusty red color, but then I put some of that into an indigo bath, and it made sort of a weird bluish green. And then I put some of that in a walnut bath, and it made a beautiful, rich, nutty brown. So I have some additional colors to add to my natural colors and then my previously dyed colors. I'm really excited. My energy has been rejuvenated for this project, and I'm looking forward to making a lot of progress on it. To keep my momentum going, I have arranged a beautiful large bowl full of all of my colors, and I have a list of how I plan to use them. And I keep looking into that bowl for inspiration. And this morning I was thinking about how much that was like a bowl of candy for trick or treat. At least it might seem that way to a fellow knitter. Ever expanding skill set. I've really enjoyed cooking with apples during the month of October, and last weekend I finally tried the German Hunter's Stew recipe that was posted on Ravelry by Kunstknit. This is a really, really delicious and wonderful version of a shepherd's pie. That's how mine came out, and it was really a hit. It's going into the cold weather cooking rotation for sure. I used two very thinly sliced, very tart apples over a mixture of organic beef, mushrooms, onions, and seasonings. And that layer of apples was underneath a layer of delicious mashed potatoes. What happened when this recipe baked in the oven is that those apples kind of disintegrated underneath the potatoes. So it was almost like the meat and then a layer of very tart applesauce and then a layer of mashed potatoes. Really super delicious, a little bit unexpected, a little hint of sweetness. Very interesting flavor profile and really hearty comfort food type of dish. I like to make my mashed potatoes by baking them in the oven and then using a ricer to, I guess, blend the potatoes, get them in a state for whipping. And I think drying them out in the oven makes them accept the cream and butter or whatever other ingredients you're going to add to make them rich and delicious. It helps that accept them more readily. So that's the technique that I used. I think this would also be great for leftover potatoes that you have, that you could just mash them up and add them to the top. And in a way, a shepherd's pie is a great way to incorporate leftovers. But this layer of thinly sliced apple between the meat or the meat and vegetable layer and the potato layer is a really clever trick. And then we were looking for breadcrumbs. I didn't have any leftover bread cubes in my freezer at the moment because I've used most of that for a bread pudding recently. But Samuel found some panko breadcrumbs in our pantry, and then we sprinkled those over the top of the potatoes, and it made for just a little bit of crunch. Super delicious. The other thing I've used apples for this month is a Louisa's cake. This is a recipe from Food 52 website. It's a very versatile, delicious, crowd-pleasing cake. It's baked in a springform pan, so it makes quite a few servings. And there's a whole grated apple in the cake, which adds moisture and a little bit of texture, although I don't think you could really identify it as apple if you didn't know. So I've made a Louisa's cake that lasts really long. It's great with tea or coffee as a dessert. It's great as a breakfast item. As listeners know, I fully endorse baked goods as breakfast food. Baked goods of any kind, cakes, pies, you name it. It's an acceptable breakfast food in my opinion. This afternoon, I plan to make a chicken stock and two soups featuring coconut milk. One will be a version of the recipe Selkit posted on the Ravelry thread with green apples and a variety of spices. I think most of them are Indian spices. That looks really refreshing and delicious. So I'll use coconut milk, the green apples, and probably some of the chicken stock in that recipe. And then I will also use coconut milk and chicken stock in a recipe for a butternut squash soup that I make almost every year for Halloween. I will post a link to the recipe. I forget where I found them, but it was two soups. Sometimes you feel like a nut, sometimes you don't. And one of the soups was sort of a higher fat, richer version, and the other soup was a low fat version, but they both featured butternut squash. And they both featured grated candy bars over the top. One had Almond Joy and one had a Mounds bar. And the technique is that you put the candy in the freezer and then you just grate it with a box grater over the top of the soup as a garnish. So you have this melty chocolate and then a little bit of that really highly sweetened coconut as a delicious accompaniment for the soup. I think it's a perfect Halloween evening soup with maybe some toast or, if I feel ambitious, some homemade scones or biscuits. I will have some buttermilk on hand, so maybe some buttermilk biscuits could be in the future. And that's going to set me up nicely for some soups to have for the week. I can add sandwiches, salad, bread, or biscuits, and have some simple and quick weeknight meals. In November, we'll be cooking with all varieties of squash for hashtag Power Pantry. So this butternut squash soup will be an excellent kickoff to the month of November. I will open a new Ravelry thread for hashtag Power Pantry for November. Please stop in to pick up ideas or share some of your own. And now for a Fleecewise update. I've been working with the fleece from Eloise, the Shetland sheep. I have 10.9 ounces, and last weekend I spread the sheet over my dining room table, and I worked very slowly and very carefully to do a process called stapling. This means that I separated all of the locks into different categories based on the staple length, the color, and the lock formation. I mentioned earlier that one of the reasons we were excited about working with this Shetland fleece is that we can tell even from the fleece in the bag that there was quite a lot of variety. And then when we unrolled that fleece and divided it, it was confirmed that there were many, many different types of fiber in this one fleece because it's an unimproved breed with some primitive characteristics. I took some photos, which I think are the best explanation and description for the wide range of fiber types in this fleece. And over the course of my stapling or separating these locks out, I opened up the tips of all of the locks to release the dirt and the vegetable matter. I pulled any second cuts or really dirty bits out of those locks, and I just had them in a pile on this sheet. And there were some pieces of fleece that were really disorganized, had a lot more vegetable matter in it. I ended up almost shredding them to release the vegetable matter. And I put those aside in a separate bag. And that's the fleece that I used to do my scouring sample. So those were not really organized locks. That was kind of a mess of different types of fiber. But I think that's a good use of a sample because it allows me to evaluate what that fiber is like when it's all blended together. I scoured that sample and let it dry, and then I just carded it into Rolags, and I've included a photograph of the stapled fleece, the washed and unwashed locks, the Rolags that I made, and I will continue to add to that list of photographs and resources. Today I made a page just for FleeceWise on the Yarns at Yinhu website. So it includes a retrospective of everything that's happened so far for the FleeceWise series part one, a list of resources, and I will continue to add to that list. So there are links to all sorts of things. There is a map of a fleece with the different parts labeled. And then there are photographs of all of the work I've done so far with the Shetland fleece that I've acquired. We will continue with part two of the series as soon as we get that all together. But I thought it was important to mention that I do have a prize for participation in the FleeceWise thread in the Yarns at Yinhu group. I think that each of us four podcasters will be offering up some kind of prize, and it took me a while to determine exactly what I would give as a prize. So I have decided on a little collection of mini skeins of my hand-spun and botanically dyed yarn that's all a product of the work I've been doing at Sheep to Shawl. As I work on my Sheep to Shawl project, I will set aside different amounts of yarn from all of the different colors that I use. And I will create a mini skein set. Everything will be labeled. And I will also include one of the rust-dyed bento bags to store all of those mini skeins. This prize will be completed probably around the end of November. So I hope that you will contribute to the FleeceWise conversation by November 15th. And then I will put that all together and send it out to one randomly selected post on that thread. I currently have a photograph of 7 or 8 different mini skeins that I've created so far, as well as the rust-dyed bento bag. This is a great storage bag and a useful project bag. I rust-dyed some fabric, not this past summer, but the one before. And then I used those fabric scraps to make some bento bags. So I hope this will be a unique and fun memento from your participation in FleeceWise. And I encourage you to enter the drawing by posting in that FleeceWise thread. The more I work with the Shetland fleece, the more I'm enjoying it. This fleece works up into Rolags that are like little clouds. They're so soft and so easy to card. And one thing that I found was that a lot of additional veg matter fell out of the fiber as I was carding it. Like I mentioned, I was using as my sample the dirtiest, most disorganized bits of the fiber that I had. So there was a lot of veg matter that fell out as I was separating it, but there was still a lot in it when I scoured it. And after I had the clean fiber and I was working to card it into Rolags, I had a towel over my lap and there was just dirt and debris just falling into that towel. So it got a lot cleaner and more manageable as I carded it. And then after I had the Rolex, I began to spin it. I won't say too much about exactly how I'm doing that, but it just worked up so beautifully. I am working to spin with a little more thickness than is my usual default spin because I want to end up with heavy fingering or sport weight yarn in the end. And so that's taking a little bit of concentration, but I have enjoyed working with the sample, and I think that this afternoon maybe I'll get a chance to wash some of the sets of locks that are a lot more clean and they're separated by type. I will need to decide if I'm going to maintain the differences in lock formation and make several different types of yarn or whether I'm going to do some blending together of those different types to create, I don't know, a more uniform variety of yarn. All big choices to make, all exciting things coming up, and thank you for joining me on this fleece-wise journey.
Acorns jumping off my Chinese house. Two ducks in my spyglass, furry as a mouse. It's a sweet nature, a sweet nature thing. It's a sweet nature, a sweet nature thing. It's a mighty fine. It's a mighty fine, mighty fine nature thing.
Thanks for listening. Music for this episode is Sweet. Song and lyrics by Samuel St. Thomas, performed by Bovine Social Club. Eat well and stay strong as you hone your post-apocalyptic skill set this week.
Sweet nature thing. It's a sweet nature, a sweet nature thing. It's a mighty fine, a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine, a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine, a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine, a mighty fine nature thing. Two stumps out there. Stumping as a chipmunk on the lawn. Six turkeys up in munching like fat hogs. It's a sweet nature, a sweet nature thing. It's a sweet nature, a sweet nature thing. It's a mighty fine. you better tell your face to smile. Jump in a river naked and hug your country mine and say, sweet nature, babe. It's a mighty fine nature thing.